You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Tammy in Canada. Thank you to all of my Canadians who are listening. And I actually have quite a few Canadians in the collective and in my coaching programs these days. So it's exciting to have you all, our little northern neighbors, or our really large northern neighbor, actually. Okay, so Tammy's question, I'm back on track, y'all. Sorry, I got diverted. So Tammy's question is about a child who is really having a difficult time at home, but not really in other environments, and how to support the parents in that and kind of processing that through the child-centered lens. So Tammy, thanks so much for the email. Let me read parts of her email for you all, and then I'll share some thoughts. So a question about kids in my practice. 9-year-old, very well-behaved, that's in quotes, and liked, and then, quote, mature in other settings such as sports and school. But at home has outbursts, will hit parents, swear, name call when experiencing big emotions, and then deals with a lot of shame after, quote, I'm a terrible kid, you must hate me, end quote. Parents are very supportive, reassuring, have emotional language, and try to help the child de-escalate. Behavior is less, but is still occurring. What is the underlying need? That's the question I'm trying to answer. Could this be a response to perceived pressure in other environments? There's also some school refusal, but this can be worked through. Still comes up, though. How would the CCPT approach address this, and what are strategies parents can use? All right, Tammy, thank you. This is a really helpful question, I think, for all of us, so I'm happy to dive into this. So I'm going to kind of tackle these in order as much as possible, but I think overarchingly, it's important for us to note that when we see that there's dysregulation predominantly in one environment, we can usually map that down to one of two things. So the first option is if it is mostly dysregulated at home, but regulated everywhere else, that's a very distinct scenario, by the way. In other words, I can manage my behavior everywhere except at home. That's different than I am managing my behavior appropriately in the playroom, but nowhere else. Okay, so let's make it very clear. Home dysregulation, but regulated everywhere else. It is almost always that the child treats the people or the person who provides them with the most unconditional love and acceptance the worst. Let me say that again. The child will often treat the person or the people from whom they get the most unconditional love and acceptance the worst. And that's essentially because I have to hold it together everywhere else, and I can do it, but then I need the place to just fall apart and let it all out, and I know that you'll love me anyway. So there's some freedom in knowing that my mom is always going to love me no matter how awful I am to her, so I can hold it together for everyone else, everywhere else, but then at home, I fall apart. Okay, so that is one option. Second option is that if they are regulated in all environments except one, it is usually a relational issue. Meaning there is some kind of fracture or there's some kind of break in the relationship between the authority figure and the child. We see this often once a child's been in play therapy for a while, that they've regulated everywhere except school, for example. It is almost always a teacher-student relationship issue. So in this case, Tammy, you mentioned that the parents are supportive, reassuring, have emotional language, and they try to help the child de-escalate. So that lends itself toward it may not be a relationship issue, but I do question, and I guess I'm curious, if these parents are actually too permissive. Because when I hear they're supportive, reassuring, have emotional language, and they're trying to help their child de-escalate, are they actually setting appropriate limits on this behavior where he's hitting them, cussing at them, calling them names? Are they just trying to be really sweet and kind and loving during those moments, or are they actually setting appropriate limits? So that becomes my question. And obviously, I don't have the answer. You might, or you might have to talk to them about it, Tammy. But we have to be very careful that just because parents seem squared away and they seem that they're very invested in their children, it does not mean that they're handling circumstances appropriately. So when they have held it together everywhere else, and then they're at their worst at home, we can liken it to a pressure cooker or to a spool of thread that keeps getting tighter and tighter and tighter wound. So essentially what's going on is the pressure is building, the pressure is building, the pressure is building, and I'm hanging on and I'm getting it through and I'm doing what I have to do. But then when I get home, I have to release the pressure. And or the spool can't be spun any more tightly and the thread snaps. So that is a really helpful analogy to share with parents sometimes about why they end up getting the worst. I actually did a parenting podcast episode related to this topic a while back. I think the title was something like "When Your Children Treat You Like Garbage" or something along those lines. And we talk a lot about this because a lot of times parents are like, I am so good to them and I am so kind and I don't raise my voice and I'm so loving and I'm so patient and I'm the one that gets the brunt of all of their junk. Well, that needs to be reframed because as frustrating as that is and as defeating as that is and as hurtful as that sometimes is, it actually means that there's a solid relationship there and that the child feels safe enough to let you see them at their worst. So there's a reframing and kind of a new lens through which you can view all of that if a parent understands the why, because the why matters. So my staff at my center uses against me all the time. Hashtag the why matters. Oh, I hear it too much. Okay. So my next thought, you mentioned what are the strategies parents can use? Well, are parents using CCPT strategies? Let's start there. Because just because they're supportive, reassuring, have emotional language, and they try to help the child de-escalate, is that being perceived as dismissive to the child? Just take a breath. You're fine. You don't need to get mad. It's going to be okay. The child doesn't feel or believe any of those things in a dysregulated state. So are they reflecting the child's feelings in those moments? Are they setting appropriate limits in those moments? That becomes my question. Because you mentioned you're wondering how the CCPT approach will address this. Well, number one, it builds an emotional vocabulary as the child works through things in the playroom. This child clearly doesn't have an emotional vocabulary or emotional IQ. Because if he did, he would not be reacting the way he is emotionally and behaviorally toward his parents. He would be verbally expressing his needs and his feelings. So we know that a child builds an emotional vocabulary as a universal outcome of the child-centered model. So that's one way that it would be addressed. He also needs to have his feelings reflected in the playroom and at home, and he needs to have appropriate limits set when necessary in the playroom and at home. Because he has to practice adhering and complying with limits, and he has to hear emotions so that he can build that vocabulary. So that would be my next question for you, Tammy, is I wonder how much psychoeducation and training that you've given to parents here so that they are aware of the need for reflecting their child's feelings, sit in the pocket of the feeling with your child. We don't try to make them think and feel it's going to be okay. They don't think or feel that. So when a child is well-behaved and mature and liked in other settings, and then is the complete opposite at home, that's exhausting. Because one is a show and one is a demonstration of the depth of the hurt. So that leads me to my final thought, which is, I suspect there's a huge lack of self-esteem and lack of identity with this child. Because everything that you're describing here, Tammy, implies that he believes if he is not perfect, he is not good. When you don't have an identity, when you don't have self-esteem, any perceived failure, any perceived misstep, any perceived negative outcome at all is that you have failed and that you are bad and that there's something wrong with you. And this is further suggested with the, he has a lot of shame afterwards. Remember, emotions will rise so far and so fast. Brain takes a break. Emotions dictate everything. Brain comes back in. And that's where shame and remorse and guilt come from. Because all of a sudden now the brain is going, you shouldn't have done that. You know better. Why did you hit her? Why did you cuss? Why did you say those things? Why? What in the world were you thinking? Well, the reality is they weren't thinking at all. And then further, I am bad. I am a failure. There's something wrong with me. It becomes a negative self-reflection rather than I made a mistake. So we also know one of the universal outcomes of child-centered play therapy is increased self-esteem. So with those two universal outcomes being addressed, a building of self-esteem and a building of emotional vocabulary, he will naturally be able to start processing things differently, responding differently, communicating differently, regulating differently. Remember, a third universal outcome is increased regulation. So all of these are going to be swirling together. Increased worldview. When I yell and cuss and scream and hit my parents, that hurts them. There's a ramification on their end as well as mine, right? So four universal outcomes very much at play here. But keep in mind that if parents are not using CCPT skills at home and they're not reflecting his feeling and they're not setting limits appropriately, it's going to take longer for him to be able to implement the acquisition of those skills at home, because the child always fixes the easiest environments and situations first. And the ones that hang on are the ones that are the most deeply entrenched and the hardest to master. So we have an established pattern of behavior here that at home, he's going to behave in these certain ways because he knows that he's unconditionally loved. The more they use CCPT skills and it mirrors what's happening in the playroom, the faster he will be able to acclimate to using the skills in that environment as well. So Tammy, thanks so much for the email, and I hope that that was helpful for all of you. If you would like me to answer a question, you can email me, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. You can also, if you're in the States, call the hotline, which is 813-812-5525. Leave me a message, and I can hear your question over voicemail. And finally, if you want to ask me questions live, you can always join the collective at ccptcollective.com. All right, y'all, I'm really grateful for each and every one of you. Thanks for spending time with me each week. By the way, I hope y'all had a lovely Father's Day, either celebrating your father or the father to your children, or just enjoying the day with friends and family. I hope that you were able to spend quality time with people that you love. And my husband and son went to the driving range and golfed together. So they had a really good time. I just watched. Golf and I are not fast friends. So anyway, but it was good for us. So love y'all. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.